Ready? Yeah. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we're at the final phase of researching, studying, and absorbing the American Book of the Dead guidebook by E.J. Gold. And as we've talked over the months, the guidebook has got three parts to it. The first part is, in essence, called the map. And then the center part is 22 plus books of the dead, and they all refer to one of the attributes of the 99 names of God. The final part, which is quite interesting, are the sermons. And we're entering into a more formal presentation of the sermons the last summer sometime, I think, or maybe it was in the fall, Pat mm-hmm. and Tamara guided us through some of the sermons. But we're going to do it in a more formal manner now. And my idea was is that what we would do is that there's individual presenters, and they will, in essence, act the role of the pastor. And this is their sermon that they're presenting now to the congregation. So, I mean, many of us, some of us were in churches where sermons were given, and others were Catholic, and other things happened. But the congregation received the sermon. They didn't read along with the sermon. So I'd like to encourage the congregation, the recipients of this delivery, to be as if you're sitting in that church receiving the sermon from the presenter.
And when we were discussing this the other day, I was speaking with Tamara, and we were looking at the order that we had sort of come up with and how we were going to move through these, not numerically, not in the order that they are printed in the book, but in the order in which someone from our wonderful study group here has come forward and volunteered. And it put me in mind of my earliest experience, which I had forgotten until then, of being sent to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. on behalf of the Methodist Church for a week-long seminar. And when I came back, I delivered a sermon to the church that had sent me, and I was 16. So I was thinking about what David was saying in relation to what is the dynamic of a congregation in relation to the pastor, and specifically when we talk about a sermon, how is a sermon different from reading aloud or from doing one of the readings? And if you walk into any of the non-Catholic forms of the Christian religion any place on the planet these days, you'll find there's a particular order to how the service goes. Most of it is very much scripted. The sermon is the place in which the pastor relates his position with the congregation to what is happening in the life of the church. So it is a present time relationship. It is not specifically taken from any one piece of scripture. They do it in the church. They usually read from a book of the Bible. And it frequently will have autobiographical character to it. But the thing that is the most notable quality, and you just mentioned it a moment ago, which is there's no one reading along. It's not known ahead of time what the pastor is going to speak about. Although it's put out on a sign in front of the church, this Sunday's sermon, you know, and they give the title of it. So it's an experience that is present time. It does not carry any specific expectation. And it is a shared experience by those who are listening together. So our shared listening chamber is through multiple modalities, but it's still, we're all in present time with this sermon together.
So for the pastors, as they come forth, they will carry the responsibility of transmitting the content of their sermon to their congregation. It's not an exercise in intellectualism or in exposition, but rather an exercise in communication and how you would communicate to others who are like-minded but may not know what you're going to say. And so for us, the congregation, and I'll be in the congregation this week, is to be open, to be willing to be surprised. Listen with everything you're able to listen to and allow it to occur. So we had a list of five individuals that were going to present this evening, and I believe that, I don't know if Grant is here. I think that he may not be online this evening after all. So, not yet. And so, why don't we just start with the second, and we're not going in a, we are going numeric in a numbered session, but it's just not linear, okay? So we're going to start with 8 and then go to 1, but since, and Grant was going to lead us off, but since hasn't been able to make it yet, we're going to go ahead and start with 1. And are you, Ivan, how does this all sound to you? Are you okay with this? You ready?
Yes, you do. And do you want me to get a stand for you?
I don't think so. I brought my hardcover since it seemed appropriate for this congregation. And just addressing what Pat's introduction here, I think that this sermon out on the sign with the movable letters out in front of the church for this Saturday or Sunday sermon, it would probably say something like the path of the practitioner or the practitioner's obligation or something like that. That would be my my take on it. So just go ahead. Okay. The Sunday sermon. So this is, I'm delivering Sunday sermon number 1. This is by Reverend Dr. E.J. Gold, D.D. If you want to bring peace to the patient, you first must relieve your own spiritual bondage and fears. Fears are dispelled by understanding the truth and by recognizing spiritual error and ridding oneself of spiritual error. You can't heal another's fears when you have fears of your own about death and rebirth. The practitioner who lacks real empathy for his fellow beings cannot practice real divine science. Without affinity for other spiritual beings like yourself, you will lack the strength necessary to guide someone through the transit world. You must also watch within yourself the tendency to become overwhelmed when the patient unveils his own fears about death and rebirth. The sick and dying tend to become overwhelmed with terror at their own imagination and beliefs. And even those who have been trained in this can sometimes cave in when pain and illness cause confusion in them. Sometimes a being just can't center with all that pain. But at the end, the pain will dissipate, and he'll see where he's going. The practitioner should always remain calm and centered in his own spiritual essence during the moments of death, in the presence of fear, illness, and confusion, because he knows about death and what happens between death and rebirth, and he is able to center on the knowledge of what is really happening spiritually during illness, dying, and death. He knows that life is simply the interplay of the primal forms of consciousness, and that the whole universe is all composed of pure spirit, that matter and energy are just ideas within the dream, and that the entire cosmos is nothing more or less than the shining, luminous void of reality, and that it always has been and always will be that. If you want to free the spirit, you have to heal the spirit first. A being can get pretty sick from exposure to the material world after a few trillion years or so, just being in that heavy field of matter and energy and being in the belief that he has a body and that he has desires and aggressions can leave a spiritual being in pretty bad condition. So you have to heal the spirit before you can free the spirit. If you want to heal the spirit, you must not bury the teaching within a form. The tender encouragement and certainty that you can give to the sick and dying and to the deceased in their confusion, your patient removal of their fears are many times better than buckets of tears, relatives in grief and disharmony, flowery speeches and pretty funerals with lots of flowers and an expensive casket. All these are nothing but grotesque parodies of the knowledge of the teaching, and they do no good for the deceased. You, the practitioner, can maintain the spirit through all the grief, fear, and confusion that he or his family and friends might go through. You may be the only truly centered and calm being in the presence of death, but you must never give in to the infectious hysteria of grief, fear, and confusion about death. In fact, you don't have to, because fear, grief, and confusion are caused by not knowing about something, being overwhelmed by a mystery, and death and rebirth are no mystery to you. So there is no real need to get involved in confusion just because someone else doesn't know about death and rebirth. And if you want to stop their fears and confusions about it, just give them a copy of the American Book of the Dead. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good, Ivan. Very effective reading. I liked your clarity.
Thank you, brother. Ivan, that was delivered with rhema. It was beautiful. Thank you.
Sure.
Are we? Yeah, I wasn't clear on whether we're commenting. Go ahead, Harry.
Oh, it's just that there's logos and there's rhema in the scriptures. One is the written word, and the other one is the writing word, and you.
Hey, Harry, put the phone up to your mouth more, please. We're losing you.
You need to say that one again.
Let me adjust my phone. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I sound like that. Anyway, it was with rhema, not just with logos that you read. It wasn't something that was written. It was something that was being written as you spoke it.
Uh-huh. Good.
I think there's a difference.
Absolutely. Yes. I agree. There is a difference.
That sermon implies that healing the spirit would be related to educating the consciousness at that point in time. Or is there some other implication?
Well, to me, this is Ivan speaking. To me, what I get from that sermon is that the fear, confusion, grieving, buckets of tears, and all of that are come from ignorance. You know, come from a fears based on not knowing. The truth, not knowing the reality about death and rebirth. And so you can heal the spirit by with the teaching, by offering the teaching to those who are lost or confused.
The era in which these sermons were being delivered at the Crestline Theological Seminary is sort of significant in terms of the other activities that were occurring. Is this loud enough for those of you on the phone to be able to hear me?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you. So that is the period in which a lot of us were starting our families, and we had simultaneously running the training for natural childbirth at home. Well, the people who are on the... I'll hold my mic. I'm holding my mic. All right. Hi, Mike. The era when the sermons were created and first delivered at the Crestline Theological Seminary corresponds to the development of the natural childbirth at home technology in tandem with the doctor's practice, Dr. Richard Tu, who is a member of the Institute, developing his practice for delivery of babies at home. So there were these two, in effect, these two processes were both being addressed in the life of the human, birth and death. And when I heard this sermon tonight, I recalled the principle of the natural childbirth at home was education. because if you understood what you were going to experience and you had training that prepared you for that experience, then you would be successful at going through the experience without fear, because fear comes from ignorance. And the same thing is being said in this sermon about the experience of death and dying, that if you have knowledge and training, if you're prepared, then you have the potential for a successful process to occur. But just, I hadn't realized, you know, the overlap is exact. I mean, you know, my twins were born premature in March of 1975, and these sermons were, if I'm not mistaken, 75, 76, 77, that
right.
era. So, you know, these things were all going on at the same time. So the processes of the human life and the consciousness during the lifetime and after the lifetime of the being, it's being talked about in these different ways, but it's the same theme.
Actually, yeah, Pat has just reminded me of an element of this too, which is interesting, that in this book, you know, the sections that David spoke about, there is the map at the beginning, and then there are the books of the dead, you know, which are based on the Sufi guides, actually, you know, on Arabic tradition, or like the 100 names of 99 names of God, so on. The sermons actually come from a different origin. I mean, they come from a different, slightly different project, because this was Reverend E.J. Gold, Doctor of Divinity, wrote these specifically to be delivered at a small chapel, you know, at a church, which was in downtown Crestline, and they were specifically meant to be part of the activity of a training program of the Crestline Theological Seminary, which was literally what we think of now as the Labyrinth Readers Society, I would say, or the Labyrinth Readers Course, and in other words, all of that sort of function. And as I may have mentioned before, EJ had us wear clerical collars, and you know, we did the whole nine yards. Like, I personally stopped short of shaving my head because I was substitute teaching in the local junior high schools, and I didn't think it was going to go over very well. So the point, what I'm saying, Pat reminded me of, is that this first sermon that I just read, it strikes me, it is, I think, in all of EJ's writing, it is about the most direct and the most lucid presentation that I can think of this principle of what are the benefits and the skills, you know, the qualities of character and so on that are required for the practitioner, and how that corresponds to, you know, in order to convey the teaching regarding the pure spirit that all of life, you know, that everything that we're experiencing is actually just a distraction or some anomaly or electrical wave or illusion or something else in the midst of reality, which is actually pure spirit. And it's I think that the sermons are of a rhetoric, they're of a style to be instructive, you know, for the master teacher or the doctor of divinity is delivering different facets or different aspects of these ideas in the form that the theological students or novices, you might say, can understand and process and make use of. And I mean, that seems to be completely clear with this first sermon.
Thank you, Ivan, and everybody. Maybe if we're ready, then let's go ahead and move on to the next pastor, which will be Harry. And if are you ready for that, Harry?
I am, David, if you guys can hear me properly.
Can hear you properly and nicely at the moment. Thank you very much. And when you're ready, begin.
My presentation is the sixth Sunday sermon by the Most Reverend E.J. Gold, D.D. And my take on a possible title for it would be Remembering Once Again What Is Really Important. Man is not liberated from his fears, beliefs, and confusions by the material world any more than he can be saved by degradation. It would be a very big error to become angered over another's ignorance or spiritual darkness. That can lead to one's own level of spirit becoming lowered by allowing anger or impatience to become senior to one's spiritual beingness. That is the same kind of danger that you face in the transit world. And you should begin now to overcome those tendencies so that you are certain that they have become harmless to your path of liberation. That can only happen when all negative tendencies have been cleared away. But in order to realize oneself as a spiritual being, one must be completely aware of the unreality of the world of matter as it is viewed in the human existence. Seen in this way, it is easy to remain in peace without anxiety about another's ignorance or spiritual poverty, because as a spiritual being, you have the power to change that for others. So just do it. And in order to realize our spiritual nature, we simply release our beliefs in the reality and power of material things, these anchor points to which we tie ourselves. Excuse me. And we turn away from the beliefs in the reality of the material world and its power over us to the absolute reality of the luminous void, which is our own true beingness, the only true reality. To spiritualize one's existence is to transform the body and mind, the apparent existence of the individual in space and time, without the world of matter, into a reformation of identity with spirit. There is no real alteration, because it has always been that you have been pure spirit. But the fact has somehow escaped your attention for the past few trillion years. If the material world and the fears and confusions it brings, with belief in it as the master of the spirit, then the spirit will not manifest through the body and the mind. The mind is present, but the owner is not at home. But if the fear and confusion of the material world are dispelled, then the body and the mind will reflect the knowledge and understanding of the being that he is pure spirit, and that his state of spiritual beingness becomes manifest within the world of material illusion. The belief that the spiritual being holds about the body and the mind, which become crystallized as belief systems or ego structures, bring about definite effects upon the body and the mind, and very strongly affect the type of rebirth that the being will tend to choose. This is why it is so important to understand the nature of spirit, the nature of one's own existence, the truth about oneself. Without that understanding, the body and the mind are useless. But with that understanding, the spirit is able to use and direct the body and the mind. Nothing about the spirit is known to the body or to the mind, but everything about the body and mind are known to the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The mind doesn't know anything about itself or how to even run itself. And that is why psychology and psychiatry just don't work, and why ordinary material solutions to existence don't work either. The mind acts as if it's its own boss. But in reality, the spirit is the owner of the mind and the body. And when the owner comes back to collect, that's the end of the failure of the body and the mind to perform their functions properly. This ends the sermon.
Bravo. It occurred to me when you were speaking, Pastor, that the principles of the Christian Science teaching of the health and the wellness of the physical body being completely dependent upon the relationship of the person to God is stated very cleanly in this sermon. I hadn't heard it before in that way, but it's so clear. The description is clean and clear there. Thank you for delivering that. I heard it.
Thank you. Well, it's a powerful reminder of what we read on every page of this book.
Mm-hmm.
But it just takes it from a different angle so that every time you hear it, it sounds new.
That's exactly right. And I think that the pastor makes it new because it's coming in that regard. One thing I noticed this time, because I wasn't ready for it yet on the first one, I noticed that I was able to get in the posture that the pastor was my guide during this reading, and now I'm receiving information from the guide, from my pastor, and it opened me up in a way that I hadn't allowed myself to be open before.
Yeah. That's a dynamic.
Well, David, it was really quite a different experience for me as well. Because when I practiced this earlier, I was just talking to myself. But here I was in the presence of our group, which provides a space and an essence that I don't have when I'm alone. And it seems to take over, and I'm in service of this higher presence. So
right.
I don't really have anything to worry about.
Uh-huh. Nice. Nothing
it's
to worry about.
It's a different experience entirely for me. So thank you for the opportunity to allow this to happen.
And by the way, I want to just contribute that I adopted the headset that you recommended, Pat, that I was a congregant hearing something for the first time. So before Harry even spoke, I was considering, what is he saying now? So I was really instantaneously in the moment of what he was sharing, and it leaves an impression, even if I can't intellectually recall it. So that was my experience.
Exactly. Very nice.
Thank you.
George, could you repeat that, please? Marvette wasn't able to hear you, and maybe put your mouth a little closer to the phone.
Oh, for sure. So what I was saying was simply, am I talking loud enough now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I said the experience, the way in which I experienced this was I adopted the attitude that Pat had suggested at the beginning, which was that we imagine ourselves as a congregant arriving for a ritual on a Sunday morning, and now we're going to hear a sermon of the pastor's reflections on the teaching. And so as Harry read, I imagined myself as though I'm hearing these words for the first time, and in so doing, I have the feeling of an impression left, even if intellectually I don't remember exactly what was said, but I was certainly, you know, my spirit was healed, you might say.
Yes. And this is, I call this, you know, active surrender, because when we're in that space and you have a delivery from such a reader, in a sense, such a pastor, that you are touched in your essential self by it. It's not, as we see in these things, we're not, this is not a linear thinking thing.
Yeah.
We're trying to unravel ourselves from the impact of the material world and taking rebirth and getting swallowed by the material world with such profundity. And we're given guidance on how to change that.
Thank you for mentioning that premise, George, because the opportunity in the listening part of this, as we listen together in our, you know, in our congregation form, which we've embodied it before, but we haven't activated it in the same way as we are tonight. When we hear a sermon together, we have, in a certain way, increased our own capacity.
Yep.
By resonance or vibratory form, or I'm not sure what the method is for why it occurs, but we collectively increase our listening capacity, which bypasses our intellectual requirement for pickiness, you know? So we can hear and feel the message of the sermon without needing to have every single little thing comprehended and understood. That's how I'm experiencing this congregational experience. That's how it's occurring to me.
And in the process, I might just add, you're right, Pat. I feel almost a dissolution of my materiality and the participation of my spirit as I'm hearing these words.
Yes.
And so when I'm listening to George and to Pat and others, it's we can practice being read to. We can practice receiving the teaching. And we practice it many ways. Tonight we're practicing as the Voyager receiving.
And a very specific method we've chosen, which is to incorporate ourselves together as a congregation, which there are some specific meanings to that type of thing, which we don't need to get into right now, but the dynamic is clean. We receive. It's delivered, and we receive. And, you know, there's some kind of, I'm going to use the word magic, there's some kind of magical process which has activated an additional quality here, at least one that we've already decided. It's we leave some of our materialism behind. Our corporalness is a little bit foggier.
And Pat, I'd like to repeat two words you used earlier, which really summarize it for me. Active listening. So instead of just passively reading along with Harry in the text, we enter into the position of an active listener who's hearing something really for the first time and being struck directly by it.
Well, let's go ahead.
Thank you.
And we'll do We'll do one more this evening, and Michelle's going to take a shot at it for us, and I think she's going to do 8. Whenever you're ready, go ahead.
This is going to be a very short sermon, and the reason I am going to make it so short is so that you will remember what I am going to say today. You, as a spiritual being, not only have the power to believe something about yourself or about your environment, if any, but you also have the power to make it true for yourself, so true that you can experience it and feel it. You have the power to give something you believe in enough reality that it has power over you. So, if you believe that you are a material man or woman and that you live in a material world in which you are born, live, suffer illness, and die, then that's what you are. And if you believe that you are a spirit, why then that's what you are. It's as simple as that. Unfortunately, you may have given your beliefs so much power that they won't just go away because you want them to. That is what you are here to do. That is what we are working out together. And it has been done. So you can do it too.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was beautiful.
That was beautiful, yeah.
Very beautiful.
I was going to say that French accent really provides an inspirational quality to the reading. I almost felt like an angel was reading to me.
Yes, another being, higher being of some sort.
Lance Leeson says...
I almost wanted her to do it again.
Hang on a second. What's that?
Lance Leeson says receiving. He wants to let us know that it's coming through.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Good.
Go ahead. George and Harry, you were saying that you would like to hear it again.
It was like a higher being decided to come down and just read us a little short something and zap us and then leave.
Well, I was so touched, and it's such a short sermon, I just didn't get a fair share. I want to hear it again.
Well, we could have her read it in English this time. I understood it even though she read in French.
Well, that French accent, anyway.
Well, I think that
fantastic.
She was in her being all the way, and that was part of the gift, and the transmission of the words was a carrier for that. Ever since we began studying this about 2.5 years ago, when we started with the ADD, it was, this is the liberation through the hearing in the Bardos. We were delivered that with full 2 feet on the ground clarity. So it was the mood of clarity that came through. And I was just reminded, I was washed by the words. Not because of the words and not because of the accent so much, but because of the being of the presenter that was given to us. Mm-hmm. We happen to be in the same room, so...
Yeah, so we're all sitting here quite stunned.
For a little... That was very nice, thank you.
Very nice.
It is a challenge to take the written word, even if it is meant to be spoken, and to allow the spoken word to be heard. And I think that's what you were talking about earlier, George, was the additional part. There's the logos, and there's the whatever you call the other part there. I guess it's Greek, huh? Raiment or something?
That was Harry.
Harry. Thank you, Harry. We have the capacity. This is the miraculous thing about the HBM in form in existence, is we have the capacity to experience as a being while in form. That's pretty incredible. Yes. And this example we've just seen of a being present with voice, because I don't know about you, but most of the time when I'm in full presence as a being, there won't be any voice thing going on, you know. I just basically lose my capacities except to be present, but not vocal, not functional. So that is you can hear that it can happen. But it is unusual. My experience of that is it's not common. So thank you for demonstrating for us that that is possible, that you can be present and deliver at the same time. Very nice. Thank you.
And we have to remind ourselves that Liam indicated that he received this. God knows where he is on the planet, but it came through this mechanism in such a way that he could get it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh?
David, that never ceases to amaze me, that through this technology we can actually create a common space.
Yeah.
I would never have thought it possible. I still don't understand it.
I don't understand it. I know that it's possible.
Well, we see some of the hints.
It blows my mind.
The hints are in these sermons that we're listening to, is that, you know, turn away from your admiration of the material world.
Mm-hmm.
We are spirit. Allow yourself to be spirit. And the fear of giving up the connection to the physical world,
mm-hmm.
be done with it. And gracefully enter into the world of spirit. And then we speak with winged words and give those to each other. So, very nice. Anything else before we prepare ourselves for the next week?
I do know one of the songs from the hymnal, if you want to do a song.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Pat can probably
yes.
actually carry
oh,
the tune.
Wow.
Yes.
So, like, give us a teeny bit of background before you start singing.
Okay, well, background. The background is I went searching through boxes and bookshelves and various places in my house for the copy that I know I have of the Crestline Theological Seminary hymnal, which we put together at that time. Just a little vellum-bound book. But it has both the music, it has a simple melody, notes written down, and the words for a set of songs. Basically, EJ asked us to have, said it was appropriate for church services to have a hymnal. So we had a little small collection of songs. And I will find it, I hope, before we are finished with this series of sermons. I hope to find the book. But I happen to remember, because I worked on that with Ellen Tisdale, and I think possibly maybe Kay Walzer might remember working on that, and
Parker may have contributed at the time. A couple of other people. But let's see if I can do this. Pat may recognize this tune. I know that one of the songs we put in there, because several of us liked it, and it came out of some other, it did come out of some church tradition, but it's called Walk in the Light, and there was only one verse to it, so I can remember it. It goes like this. Walk in the light, it's a beautiful light. Somewhere the dewdrops of mercy shine bright. Shine all around us by day and by night. Freedom, the light of the world.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. We just repeated it. Walk in the light. It's a beautiful light. Somewhere the dewdrops of mercy shine bright. Shine all around us by day and by night. Freedom, the light of the world.
Thank you.
Anyway, there, yeah. I was quite partial to that one, and so I remember.
Yeah,
for good reason.
So, thank you, Ivan.
George, is there one that you would like to work on for next week?
Yes, sermon number 12,
okay.
If it's available.
It is. Okay, and Grant, we're assigning you 16, which I'll send around in the email. So I thought maybe next week we could do Marvette will lead us in 14. Maybe George in 12.
Right.
So let's see.
And Grant in 16.
C, Grant in 16. And then if we flow over and have more time than Pat, but we'll start with those three in that order next week. Okay?
And even though Grant was supposed to do sermon number 8 today, he's going to do 16 next time? Is that...
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay. Perfect.
And Tamara is reminding us that she signed up for number 18.
Thank
Correct.
You.
Correct. I've got her down as that, Tamara.
Yeah.
And so if there's extra time, we'll assign one of the other pastors who've already spoken, and then we'll go in that way.
Remember, you can invite all the souls.
Other congregants.
Anyone that would prefer to be the recipient of a sermon rather than to be given a reading, just tell them to come along next Wednesday night and hear what is going to be said, what will be spoken. This is so
that's
lovely.
That's a great idea.
So we have the opportunity for a few weeks here to practice receiving and practice giving to others. This is a good opportunity. So thanks, everybody, for coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks. Good night.